This is the True Faith Podcast. I'm Alex Hurst, joined by Michael Collin and Simon Carmel for a special show with a guest I'm sure you'll all recognise and understand. Recognise his voice, you clearly understand him because he speaks English. It's Matthew Raisbeck of BBC Radio Newcastle, who is both a commentator, matchday commentator, and a journalist for Newcastle United. So, Matt, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me. I hope you can understand me. Yeah. You should be able to.
What was that?
You speak far more clearly than any of us.
It's a good start.
So you're already ahead. So I suppose the reason I wanted to talk to you today was kind of find out a little bit about what it's been like for you as a journalist this season, not just in terms of the positive steps that club have made compared to previous seasons, but also the fact that you work closely with Rafa Benitez on a week-by-week basis. And the journalists who have had on the show this season have all had some great stories or very nice things to say about the club and the manager this season and kind of the change in atmosphere. Is that something that you've found compared to previous seasons?
Definitely. Firstly, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant job, and the access you've got is phenomenal. It's almost unbelievable what you can do, where you can go, who you can speak to, and the kind of privileged position that you're in. And definitely when things are going well, it's a better job to do because everybody's happy. Players, management are all more willing to talk. The club are very helpful, I would say, Newcastle generally, but they're even more helpful because obviously things are going well, and that's not that is a good thing, absolutely. And when you've got somebody like Rafa Benitez at the helm who understands the media, knows what they need to do their job, and also understands the importance of building up trust and good relationships with them, then yeah, it's like a gold mine. It's absolutely fantastic. And there's such a feel-good factor about probably every area of the club at the minute. You almost don't want it to end, but things are heading in the right place on the pitch because of Rafa Benitez, and off the pitch as well, largely because of him too, because of the aura that he's got. When you talk to him, you go away feeling better about yourself, whether you've had 5 minutes with him or half an hour sometimes when you stop recording, as we sometimes get. He's absolutely brilliant. He's generous with his time with everybody, not just the media, you know, people that he meets. We know that about him, and I think we're very, very lucky to have him. And certainly from a media perspective, it is one of the best times to be watching and covering Newcastle United because of what's going on and the change that he's engineered.
Very interesting. And I suppose for the listeners and us, how far do you go back then with Radio Newcastle's?
Well, the first manager that I can remember at Newcastle from working for the BBC, I started 11 years ago between school and university. So it was Glenn Roeder, he's in charge, and Damien Duff signed that summer. It was quite an underwhelming time. He'd done well to get the team to seventh, taking over from Sue Ness, I think, you know, doing a good job with decent players, whereas before that, decent players were not being managed in a way that suited them and their abilities. And
Hang on, you're saying Graham Souness is not a good manager?
I'm saying that it was that was a bad time. And then Roeder came in, and he was well liked, I think, by people up here generally. He was a player for Newcastle, the press liked him, and I met him because he came into our studio and did a phone in, and you know, he was very, very committed. But it didn't go well that season. It was a disappointing year. And then you had Allardyce, and then Keegan came back. Everything was wonderful. So within a couple of years, you had just that typical Newcastle drama changes. And today we speak 10 years to the day since Mike Ashley bought Sir John Hall's shares, isn't it? So that was, you know, one of the first things I experienced working on as well at the BBC. So like I say, typical Newcastle, things happening all the time. And then obviously it got worse, the relegation and the madness of Kinnear, and then it got better, and then it got worse again, and now it's probably better than it has been in the 11 years I've been lucky enough to see the other side from a media perspective. But Newcastle United is a gift for the media generally, because there's always something going on. And you know, speaking locally, we cover everything that happens. The Chronicle, the local newspaper, are on top of things as well. It's very important to them. But outside the North East, Newcastle is big news. It's big news in London with all the newspapers. They all want a Newcastle line. They're all at the games. Go away this season in the Championship, there's plenty of national media interest in Newcastle. And only just last week, we were visited by French television, who've been in the city doing a piece. They've done it something with a lot of reporters. They did something with Olivier Bernard that came in to see us at BBC Newcastle. So, you know, Newcastle United, it always has been, in my experience, and still is, big news, and that will only increase next season when they're back playing in the Premier League.
You touched on joking here. let's go back to those days. Was it as mental on the inside experiencing that? It didn't feel like it was real. I think we were at university at the time. We were young and we found it a little bit funny that we had Joker here in charge, but we also just couldn't believe it was happening. Like, was it as crazy being, you know, in the position you're in?
Well, that,
for you guys,
yeah. Well, that was a time, obviously, when Mick Lowes, who was Newcastle commentator for 25 years for us, was doing the job. So he was the man who would interview him, and I think even somebody like Mick was caught by surprise by that appointment. I mean, who wasn't? It was just crazy, wasn't it? Of all the people you would think, Joe Kinnear, who hadn't been in football for years, and, you know, you remember him from Wimbledon in the 90s doing all right with them, you know, perhaps a club punching above their weight, but it was just silly, and you know, his record wasn't good either, was it? And then obviously he had the health problems, which is quite serious and not nice for him, but it was just a strange and horrible season, and I think that was probably, in some ways, apart from relegation, the lowest point, because everyone was just wondering why and how, and like it was a joke. It's the kind of thing that happens at Newcastle, isn't it? That kind of left field thing that just catches everybody out, and you just wondering why us, why now? And yeah, you reflect on it, and there was that famous press conference, which everybody knows, with the fruity language from Kinnear, frequently fruity.
We know it off by heart.
Yeah. It still gets talked about to this day. He made an impact, certainly, and then of course he came back and wasn't around for very long the second time around. But yeah, it's strange, isn't it, that somebody like that was associated with Newcastle and was manager of a team that had Michael Owen, Joey Barton, players like that in. It was bizarre, but look, they deserved to go down that season, and he was one of the reasons why, wasn't he? It was strange. I didn't have a great deal to do with it other than working on our shows at BBC Newcastle, and at that point we didn't have a nightly phone in. We've got one now, Total Sport, which has been on since 2009, so it was the year Newcastle were in the Championship, the first season that we started it. But on Saturday afternoons, yeah, we would get plenty of calls from irate fans unhappy with Kinnear. He was, but he united people in the sense that not many of them liked him, put it that way. But apparently a nice man to deal with by all accounts, though, and good with the media one-on-one, and well-liked by staff. So on a personal level, people can only speak as they find, but on a football level, madness, wasn't it?
I met him at Torgon a couple of years after he finished, and he was a nice bloke. He was funny, had a lot of good things to say about Newcastle, but then you just think, like, he actually was our manager.
I don't want to embarrass Si too much here, but I remember being at university side and that you said, "Who is he?" You didn't know who he was. New Newcastle manager, 2008. But what's interesting there in terms of your history? I mean, 11 years is a decent stint so far to be at the BBC. The BBC seems to have enjoyed, like, be the only media organisation that's enjoyed a consistent relationship with the club. Is that maybe the impartiality and the fact that you feel like you kind of, I don't know whether you try not to be controversial or ignore the kind of worst aspects or allegations thrown at the club, or do you think it's just because you get on well with the people there, that people know and trust you? Because every single other, well, a lot of the other journalists anyway, have had their ups and downs, particularly in the written press.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit of most of the things that you touch on there. I mean, firstly, we have a contract with the club for broadcasting rights, so we agree, the management of the station and the hierarchy of the club agree a deal. And we're in a contract now for commentary, 3 years. So we have that deal with them, and obviously there's various things in the contract, you know, in terms of what we're entitled to, access to players, what we can do, which is commentary of every match, home and away, attend press conferences, things like that. So we have a commercial relationship with the club, which is obviously very important, and that's the case for most local radio stations, that it is really the only place where you'll get live commentary, BBC local radio. Now, there are some stations in, I think, the northwest that do a bit of local football and rugby league, but it's generally BBC local radio. So it's very important to us to have it. It pulls in a massive audience. We've just got our audience figures, and on Saturday afternoon they're huge, and that's probably because of the championship, because obviously fewer games are televised, and they're bringing in streaming next season for some matches, but obviously that wasn't there this year. So
are they really?
Yeah, for some matches through the EFL website.
In the UK as well, or?
I haven't read all of
it.
I think it's for foreign fans,
as if that wasn't this year. That's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Well, we're not foreign fans. Yeah, also,
most Newcastle games have been broadcast.
But also, a lot of foreign fans listen to Matthew, because you go around the world now. Don't
you? That's the other aspect. And the most frequently asked question I think we get is, why can't we listen to you on the BBC website?
Yeah.
And to answer it now, we've got the radio rights for commentary, so we put it on FM, Freeview, DAB, AM, depending on whether Sunderland play at the same time, because we have to split frequencies. But the clubs have got the online rights, so they sold us the radio rights, they've kept the online rights, but they use our commentary through their website, which is available for free now, which is good. You just have to sign up. Previously, you have to subscribe and pay a monthly fee. So that's the first aspect of our relationship with the club. I mean, secondly, I think people getting on well, and Mick Lowe's, who did the job before, had a great relationship with the press officers, managers generally. I mean, even Sam Allardyce, who at that time didn't speak to the BBC, got on with Mick and would always speak to him, you know, say hello and acknowledge him. But obviously Allardyce had personal reasons and didn't do any BBC. He does now. But that is important, having somebody there who the club can trust and know that we'll be fair, but we'll also be honest. And I think the way the BBC operates as a whole as well is slightly different to some other areas of the media. I mean, we always make sure that what we're reporting is right, and we know, and you know, we'll second source things. So sometimes the BBC might be last to confirm something or name somebody or whatever, but they just take a little bit longer. And I think perhaps that approach is perhaps a little more sensitive than other media organisations, but I think it is appreciated. And BBC is supposed to be impartial, and with football coverage it's difficult because you kind of have to be a little bit partisan, because you're obviously following a team, and we go to whichever ground and there's an opposing station there covering the game from the aspect of the opposition. We're doing it from Newcastle's perspective, so you are championing the team, but without being overly biased. You're doing it from that perspective, but you're not being completely blinkered and one-sided, or well, we're not supposed to be. So I think all those things combined have helped us have a good relationship with the club. We still do now, with the manager, with the press office, and the players have all been really good this season as well. And I hope people like our coverage and trust it. We certainly do a lot on Newcastle. We do an equal amount on Sunderland as well. But you know, the media is changing as well, so we have to be on top of things. And you see we're doing a lot more social media, Facebook Live, Twitter, so who knows where it's going to go in the next few years. But you know, radio commentary has been important, and I still think it is.
Very interesting. Talk a little bit about you now as a Newcastle fan, and you mentioned that you've kind of started the commentary full time this season, but done it previously. How hard is it to kind of keep your emotions in check when the ball hits the back of the net? I'm trying to think, and Norwich, I don't know whether you did the Norwich game, but if you put yourself in that situation, or any game where there's a last minute goal, even Chris Wood against Leeds, is it difficult to try and keep your emotions in check and try and report, or do you find it, are you kind of in the zone? Is it quite easy to think, no, I'm actually just reporting what's going on here?
It's both, actually. I think you feel it no matter what, and that example there of Chris Wood, I mean, we're all deflated, and obviously I have to keep talking and describe what's happening, and I've listened back to it, and yeah, I think you can hear almost the disappointment in my voice and in John Anderson, our co-commentator, former Newcastle player's voice, at what's happened. And you know, you're reflecting what it is on the pitch, and telling people what it means, what it represents as well. And you know, it's all right to be excited when there's an important goal or a last minute dramatic winner, or it's all right to be, you know, not as excited when they concede in dramatic circumstances or something goes wrong. You have to reflect what you're seeing and you know, deliver it from that Newcastle perspective. But yeah, it is hard sometimes, especially with referees. Nottingham Forest away being a prime example. That was the second match that I did after Mick Lowe stepped down, and it was on Sky. We didn't have any television replays. Now, I'm used to that because I've done a lot of non-league football following Gateshead up and down the country, but they were key incidents and we had no idea, we couldn't see. So maybe our commentary would have been different if we'd seen it again, but obviously we were stunned, and yeah, I think that came across in Burton as well. There wasn't a replay available to us. We could see in real time what had happened. There's a screen in the press box which is 15 seconds behind, so that you see something with a naked eye, and then it's very useful for us because then we can recap on it, watch it again a few seconds later after you've told people what's happened. But we only saw the penalty taken again. There was no replay, no different angles.
I was listening to you for that because I couldn't get at the game.
Yeah, we had no idea what was going on.
It was great commentary, but it was quite apparent how ridiculous it was. So you both were just like, nobody knows what's happening.
Didn't we tune in on the way home? There was still...
Yeah, I always say so on the way home, trying to get some kind of... Because the weird thing about that is, we always listen to you anyway, but we kind of switch on the radio in the car back from the match, and the Nationals weren't really... Because it's a championship.
Yeah.
It was all the referees made a bollocks in a championship game. It's like, it's weird how little they care. If that had been a Premier League game, like, the world would have stopped, or the football world.
Or probably if it was against... If it was the other way and it was like went against Newcastle, so it went against Newcastle as opposed to Sports Brazil.
When against,
if it had been Burton that were denied the goal,
but I still think like your point's right. Like it was quite evident, even after the game, no one had a clue.
The funny thing about that is, and this is I was talking about media changing and you know, things being digital now, and that's obviously where things are heading, even, you know, all the time now. But people were bringing us their phones as we were talking and showing us screenshots from Sky Sports News, and there were videos, and people had at the other end of the ground obviously filming a penalty, and that had been passed around on Twitter. It's obviously got a hashtag on, and people were... John Anderson left his seat and went to watch it on somebody's laptop through Twitter, and someone was bringing me a phone looking at that, which was brilliant. I mean, 5 years ago, well, maybe even 2 or 3 years ago, that couldn't and wouldn't have happened. But it was puzzling. Mind you, selfishly and personally, we were glad that the referee admitted that he got it wrong, because we would have looked a bit silly if there had been a rule change that we didn't know about. And we said that at the time, you know, maybe there's a law, because there were, I think, 84 introduced last year, small alterations, like tweaks to the rules, and if we didn't know about it, then we might look a bit stupid. But it was maddening. And then it was hard. It went on for about 7 or 8 minutes, and then it was like, what did they add on?
It was
stupid. But then his statement as well afterwards, it's all unprecedented. The season's had it all, really, and especially where referees are concerned. I mean, go back to the first night against Fulham, and I was at work in the office watching it, and you know, I couldn't believe it. And I think Mick Lowe said something like, you know, if that's the standard of refereeing that we're in for, it's going to be a long season. And yeah, you know, as ever, Mick was right, and that just set the tone, didn't it? Simon Hooper, who did the playoff final at Wembley at the weekend with the penalties that Newcastle should have had, and yeah, referees have been a constant source of frustration. We've got to be fair, and I often say that, you know, referees are closer to it than we are. Still doesn't mean they get it right, but it is difficult, and you've seen how the coaching staff have struggled to control their emotions. It must be hard for the players as well, and for us it is hard, because obviously if Newcastle do better, it's better for us. But John's a fan, I'm a fan, we want the team to win, we have to keep a lid on it sometimes. So you've got to try to detach yourself a little bit and try not to take it personally if something goes wrong. You know, and things have gone wrong a lot over the last few years. This year it's been largely brilliant in terms of what the club's achieved, but yeah, that's the thing, you've got to be passionate, but you have got to try just to take a step back and not let it affect you, because you've got to focus on doing the job. I suppose it might be a bit different if you're typing it, you know, if you're on the newspaper lads, because you're not shouting, you're not talking, communicating all the time. You can compose yourself. But we're doing it in real time, trying to be accurate, trying to be fair, trying to give context, trying to give all this information out. And yeah, it's difficult. And I dare say difficult again next season, perhaps more so, but for different reasons.
Yeah, and in terms of, you said there that you've had a good background in live match day commentary with Gateshead, that's put you in good stead for making the step up to Newcastle. Do you have any commentary heroes from through the, apart from Mick, obviously? Yeah.
We all listened to Mick, didn't we? When I was growing up, I didn't have Sky until I think it was until I was about 15. So listening to Mick was my way of getting to the match. I went to some games when I could, but you associate that voice, that person with a team, and it's probably the same in every other region. In fact, I think there was a piece on the BBC recently, the Notts County commentator has done that job for 40 years. Wow. So, he is really part of the fabric of that club, and it's no exaggeration to say that, Mick was the same, and for a couple of generations of fans, people our age, mid to late 20s, let's be kind.
Well done.
I think we all are. Then that's the voice you associate with the big moments. And to be fair, Justin Lockwood as well, who took over from Mick at Metro and then went to Century as it was and is now on Heart in the Morning. Great bloke, Justin. Know him quite well, like him a lot. He was really good when Mick left. And Nick Barnes, who does Sunderland for us, used to do Newcastle United for us at BBC Newcastle. Ooh. So I've listened to a lot of Nick as well, but obviously Mick being the main one. But people like that make it sound easy, and it's not easy. There's a lot going on, there's a lot that you've got to do. There's no right and wrong, but there are some principles to follow. But I think people like that are very, very naturally good, natural communicators, and you learn a lot by listening to the good people. And there's some fantastic commentators out there. It's all about opinions, though, isn't it? There's people who I will love listening to that other people might think, I prefer somebody else, and vice versa. There's a lot of good people in BBC local radio covering, just one team. Five, like John Murray, who's from Northumberland, is the football correspondent. He does England and all the big matches. He's fantastic, so cool and calm all the time. Ian Dennis on Five Live used to do Newcastle United for BBC Newcastle. He did the Barcelona Asprilla hat-trick. I just sent him the commentary earlier, actually, because I'm archiving some stuff, some really old stuff on mini discs before we throw them out from 20 years ago. And he's very good. Conor McNamara on Five Live, who does a bit of rugby and golf as well, is always calls things really, really well. And you can do more than one sport, which I think is a really, really admirable thing. And we all know some great people on television. Martin Tyler, I think, is just, it's iconic, isn't it, his commentary. And TV commentary is different to radio commentary because you've got the pictures, so you don't say as much. You're not always telling people where the ball is because you can see them. You don't need to give them the score because it's in the corner. Whereas on radio, they are two of the biggest things. Give the score out all the time, so you put the radio on, just get in the car. And that's the one thing you want to know that you can't see, and you need to know where the ball is and which team's got it. So different principles applied to each, strand of the discipline, TV and radio. But yeah, those are just some of the names there, people who are really good. But everyone's got their own style and personality, and you can incorporate things that other people do that you think are good, but obviously don't try to do an impression of somebody. And sometimes it takes a while for somebody to find their own style and like develop a personality, but you've got to just try best you can to be yourself doing it. And all those really good people, I think, they're all very distinct, and that's one of the things that makes them good. I mean, you probably, like me, when I say growing up with Mick, but voices like Martin Tyler, Barry Davies as well, Match of the Day, I guess they'll be the ones that you remember on television.
Yeah, Jonathan Pearce from UEFA Cup days. Channel 5 UEFA Cup.
Champions League qualifiers, yeah.
Do you have a favourite line of commentary in history?
Ooh. I've got one, but I'll let you go first.
I've got a handful, and I love talking about commentary.
I always liked the way Martin Tyler would shout Shearer.
Yeah.
When there was a goal. I mean, there's loads, isn't there? Everybody remembers the Philippe Albert one.
Justin Lockwood for Arsenal. I didn't really like him before that because he used to do the thing on the pitch at half time, and then that commentary was just brilliant.
Yeah,
I completely changed my opinion. Obviously, I've never met the guy. I'm sure he's a lovely bloke.
He is. No, I assure you, he is.
But that commentary, I just thought was spectacular. So.
But that's the thing, if it captures the moment yeah. correctly and gets across the passion, but also you know what's happened and you get a real sense of just what's going on, that's like I said, capturing the moment, and almost reacting like a fan would react, which he did in that Tiotti one, didn't he? Shake the room, I think. Because at that point, everyone was calling him Shake Tiotti because they'd been wrongly told that it was Shake and not Check, so it worked, but it's still fantastic. I listened to him at Feyenoord when Bellamy scored the last minute winner. But what else can you say? You know, sometimes you just have to scream a name, and I'm
thinking of a famous Middlesbrough commentary when they were in the semi-finals of the the Europa League. That's one of my favourites. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with just losing yourself in the moment. Yeah. I'll show you it after this meeting, it's so good.
It was Ali Brownlee, who passed away last year, actually. He worked for BBC Tees. He might have been on Century at that point, as it was.
Massimo Macaroni made it 4-4 or something, so on aggregate, Middlesbrough were going to go through. Mm-hmm. I'll find you the clip, it's brilliant.
Everyone around my house from Parma. It was wonderful, wonderful. And he was somebody who was brilliant, but you know, really, really at the high end of just being passionate and almost a fan with a mic, which nothing wrong with that at all. There are others who are, like I say, more detached and at the other end of the scale who just step back and are really cool and get excited when they should, but you know, they keep it at a certain level, but Ali Brownlee then, you know, lost it. But I mean, what a moment. I mean, it wasn't great as a Newcastle fan watching that, was it? Middlesbrough getting to the UEFA Cup final, but no, you're absolutely right. That was brilliant. There's loads of great examples out there, not just from football as well, from other sports. People will remember. We did a program on the BBC just before London 2012. Every local station did. It was called Commentary Moments. And we got sent stuff from the 1930s. You know, they were like the very first football commentary, and the pitch was set out in grids, and that's where back to square one comes from. Because that was the first square on the pitch, so it was printed in a newspaper. No, I think it was the Radio Times, the BBC publication, and then it was, you know, this is how to follow the match. So the commentator on the BBC would tell you, ball back to square one, which was, I think, like the left back position. I'm not sure if it was three or four across.
The co-commentator saying the numbers of the squares, and another one saying what was actually happening.
Yes.
Square two,
isn't that?
So good, really, really clever.
It helped people follow the game. So, I mean, it goes back a long way. But we had an unbelievable response. It was a national program, Commentary Moments. Then every station would sort of opt out of that, as we would call it, and do their own. And then I think we handed back to Radio 5 Live. I think it was Colin Murray. I'm sure they'll be online somewhere, but. You know, we had people sending in their favourites, and it was the Esprit one. It was Mick Lowe's commentary on Ben Arthur's goal against Bolton, and Tiotti. Which was brilliant. There were some fantastic examples, and you know, obviously we did some Sunderland ones as well. Mark Poom, when he scored the header, the goalkeeper at Derby, G Dong Won, the goal against Manchester City. You know, every on time, every club, every final, I'll have something, but. You know, it just shows it's important, and even though media is changing, like I say, I still think it is important, radio commentary, because not everyone can get to the match and you can't watch every match, and in-car listening is still quite a big thing, so I hope, and I think it's still got a long way to go, but it's a popular subject, and you sit down and talk to anybody, they've all got opinions on who their favourites are, and they've all got their own favourite pieces of commentary.
I think you were really spot on about Mick, and we are sort of broadly a similar age, I think. For me, like, Newcastle United was Mick Lowe's thing, especially for the younger generation, even today, like you say, with more access to streams and television and stuff like that. Do you feel any pressure because of that? Because, like, your relationship with Mick as a fan, as a child growing up, you know, Mick had that kind of, I don't know whether you lads remember it, I'm sure you will, of big moments. He would slow down. especially if it was a big goal, he would kind of start speaking a lot more slowly. And that's what I was like. I don't know, when listening as a kid and as a young teenager, he was so good at painting a picture of just from not even the words he used, just from the tone of voice and how he was talking. Do you feel any pressure to think, well, you know, that's your responsibility now for the next generation, for the next, you know, 8 to 15 year olds, or do you just think, I can't think about that, I've just got to do what I need to do, and if it happens, it happens?
I don't feel any pressure, because I got asked to do the job, so I've got that, firstly, that blessing from Mick, because he was brilliant, and I get on brilliantly with him, speak to him all the time. Now he's you know, in the Northeast often, he's doing a lot of talking events. You might have been to some of them. I know they're publicised on NUFC.com, and I think he's got another one coming up quite soon. So he was brilliant about it, and he's given me loads of advice, loads of help, and you know, encouragement. So that's important for a start. But also, you can't have fear, because I always think, and it applies to any radio or TV, like once you're in a studio or once you're in a match and the mic is on, you've got to do it. You can't hold back, you can't freeze, you've just got to go for it. And like I said, it is hard, and people like Mick and like all the other good ones we've talked about and some other good ones we haven't talked about, they make it seem simple. They make it, you know, the words just flow out in a beautiful formation, and you think, wow, that's fantastic, but it isn't easy. And when you think about the responsibility of doing it for a club like Newcastle at a big station where the most listened to BBC local station, apart from Radio London, which is kind of separate because of the size of the area that broadcasts to, then, you know, it is a significant role, but it's not pressure, it's privilege, it's fantastic. And, you know, I'm very lucky to be able to do it, to be able to go to every match and sit there with a microphone on and talk about what's happening. We all love football, we all love talking about football. I'm incredibly lucky that I can just do that, and that is an occupation. It's silly, really, because it's not like proper work, but you know, you've got to enjoy it, you can't be fazed by it, and you've also, I think, got to understand that, yeah, there's an expectation on you to do the job and do it well and be able to, you know, convey everything in the right fashion. But I wouldn't say pressure. And also, I filled in for Mick 24 times before he stood down, so I'd had that experience of doing some Newcastle matches, so I wasn't just chucked straight into it. I was at Barnsley in October and did a couple of home games before Mick announced that he was leaving, and I did Bristol City in August as well, so I've done some Championship matches this year. So, you know, stepping into it wasn't anything new. I was just doing it permanently. I wasn't just going to do one match and then, you know, Mick was back. So no, I didn't feel any pressure, and the worst bit personally was a press release went out and I had to have a picture taken for it, and I absolutely hated that, because I just wanted to keep my head down and just carry on, because to me I was still working at the station. I was just going to be changing my role slightly, doing something that I'd done now and again in the past on a, you know, on a regular basis, and that was it. And to me, the change didn't feel that big, but then when there's other stuff going on, I thought, oh, right, you know, yeah, this is a reminder of just how big it is. But that was the worst bit, the press release that went out, which I just avoided. I didn't read it. And also, I put together our tributes for Mick, so there was a lot of going through archives, there was a lot of ringing around people. Everybody that we asked to come on said yes, of course, you know, big people in football, Alan Shearer, you know, answered our call and said of course he would come on. He came on live on our breakfast programme to talk to Mick about Mick, which shows this standing that Mick has in football. And listening to that made me think, yeah, you know, this is how good you've got to be, but that's no bad thing. Because he was fantastic, he still is brilliant. I'm sure he'll commentate on football again. I think you'll hear him probably across the BBC in roles. Maybe It's up to him whether he covers football again, but he had 25 years of being the best, doing it at the top. You don't do it for that long up here if you're not brilliant. But yeah, that was the best thing for me, to listen to how good he'd been and realise that's a level you've got to be at. But you know, it's a privilege to do the job, like I say, and no, I don't feel any pressure. I absolutely love it. It's been fantastic. And you know, like I say, I talk to him all the time. He's great support. He's a good friend of mine. And you know, if I can be as, you know, half as good as he is, then you know, I think I'll do a decent job. But absolutely big shoes to fill. But it's fantastic. You know, I love Newcastle United. I love football. We all do. And you know, it's brilliant at the minute because of the great story that there is with Rafa and the team doing so well.
All right, great to hear. Some questions now I'll throw at you. So, favourite game this season to commentate on and why?
Oh, that's difficult. I mean, I've said to people when they've asked me, "Oh, are you enjoying it?" I said, "Yes, the job's exciting, but the football isn't always exciting, because some of the matches this season were awful, weren't they?" I would say, see, Brighton and Huddersfield away were brilliant results, but apart from the last 10 minutes at Brighton and maybe the first half an hour at Huddersfield, you know, wasn't that enjoyable, was it? It was a bit nervy. Barnsley was brilliant, but it wasn't all brilliant, because you know, you knew that something else could affect things. I think Preston was really good in the second half. Game from start to finish. That's a tough one, that. I'll have to have a little bit of a think. I quite enjoyed Brentford, even though kind of got battered, but won. But that had been the case in a lot of matches, hadn't it? Like, so, especially away from home.
This is a good one to ask about. So that I listened to that game, because I was putting ad tickets and it got changed last minute, so I listened. Couldn't go over the weekend.
It caused a lot of people.
Yeah, I got rid of my tickets, but
didn't it?
Lost out on the train ticket, unfortunately. But
just quickly, while you mentioned Barnsley, did you know before us in the press box that the fellow had conceded?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is when I was talking about radio and commentary still being important. We sent one of our reporters to Villa Park. So
from BBC Newcastle?
From BBC Newcastle, yeah. So we applied for a pass for him, and he got in, and he took the broadcasting kit, and we did a few bits of them beforehand. And we checked in with him every few minutes. There was no general guide. It was just up to me. So roughly every 5 minutes, I would say, Chris Sykes is called. Let's go to Chris at Villa Park. Anything happening? No. And then there was, after about 20 minutes, some of the fans were starting to cheer, and I think a rumour had gone round. So we went straight, literally straight to him, and he said, "No, nothing happened." So we were, with our hands, because we were talking, just telling everyone to calm down. No, can't see it now, it's radio, but you know, I'm doing just wagging my finger like footballers do at referees. No, nothing's happened. And then, when it went 3-0, we were still describing Gale's goal. And the way it works is we have somebody on the desk in the studio who basically plays the interviews, switches our mic on, so puts it live on the radio. We switch it on our kit. Somebody operates the desk in the studio, and they communicate with us in our headset. So they just said, they were saying all afternoon, goal at Brighton or free kick at Brighton, incident at Brighton. It's not at Brighton, it was at Villa Park. So all I heard was goal at Brighton, but I thought it was goal for Brighton. So I just fairly, in a resigned fashion, said, Chris Sykes at Villa Park, and he went, "It's 1-1. So we were stunned. I looked at Ando, who, you know, is a very realistic man, but even he had a big smile. And we just turned to the fans besides, and we're just giving, you know, 1-1. Not with our middle fingers, but our index fingers, and we turned to in the boxes, because we're at the back row of the press box. It's the posh seats behind us. We were, you know, telling all the fans, and some of them wouldn't have it, wouldn't
really
believe us. And I was pointing to the headset and like thumbs up, and then people started to look at their phones, and then everyone around the ground knew, and that was brilliant. And that was the benefit of having somebody there. But that's the benefit of live radio that you can't get. Also, there was no signal during the match, and we were trying to tweet stuff afterwards, and it was a nightmare. So I can imagine everybody was just trying to find out. But I mean, what a, I don't know where you were in the ground, but it was
we're on the corner,
wasn't it?
We're on the corner.
You were not on the pitch. One of the best moments I've ever had. Like, to be able to celebrate that in the middle of celebrating a goal while Gail was doing the going down celebration. It was just too much to ask. It really was.
It just, those kind of things don't normally happen in Newcastle, do it?
No,
because it went flat, didn't it?
Yeah, so very flat.
For, you know, in the second half, everybody knew. I can't remember. It's all a bit of a blur. If it was before or after Mbemba scored, I think it was before, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And hear a pin drop, but then, you know, 2-0, great. And then
Gail scored. We did the going up celebration. So we started thinking, oh, you know, it's not so bad. It's still a good day. And then it's like, you're joking.
Yeah.
There was one guy at the bottom of the corner that had managed to get some signal on his phone, and everybody was just swarming him, like
lifting his phone like a trophy.
Have you got signal? Is it wanting?
I don't know how he got signal. There was no Wi-Fi in the press box either, so that was down. So it was a difficult day to find things out, and we were lucky we had somebody there. But I mean, it was a memorable day because Mbemba scored first of all, and then Haidara appeared from nowhere. But then that happens. It was just incredible, wasn't it? You didn't want to be in the championship, but that, you know, you would never swap that. You would never change that, would you? You know, I'm glad we had that rather than finishing fourth or fifth bottom in the Premier League, which hopefully, you know, we will not have to worry about much higher up in the coming seasons. But it's just incredible, wasn't it? But like you say, you know, I'm just finding it hard to pick out, because I wasn't at QPR, which was obviously crazy. Leeds away, I mean, I think it was, I watched it on TV and they were just streets ahead of Leeds, weren't they? I can't really think of a game that really stands out as being incredible.
Birmingham 4-0, that was a good game. That was a good home game. We played well there, I thought.
You might be going to ask me, so I'm sorry if I'm spoiling your questions. Worst team I've seen, Birmingham. Four times, twice at St Andrews. They were horrendous. I mean, you lads know as well, but even under Gary Rowett, the first one.
Yeah.
And I think they were sixth in the table. God, they were dire, weren't they? It was lamentable stuff. And then they're in the FA Cup, then a replay, and then they're again in the league. I mean, they, you know, without being unkind, they'd send you to sleep. They were really struggling, weren't they? I thought Rotherham were better when Rotherham came up here. I know they nearly got in, didn't they, with that great recovery save. But yeah, anything involving Birmingham would not be up for the best game of the season for me.
Don't get Mickey started on Birmingham. He's not a fan.
St Andrews or
the City?
Just the City.
Alright.
Yeah.
The football clubs.
I don't know in particular. But,
West Brom next year.
The City. Nah, I refuse to go to the Midlands. It's a curse.
Were you at Wolves?
No. I've not been back since.
Since Villa last year. But then I went twice to Birmingham and both games were disgraceful.
Wolves wasn't great either, mind.
No, I was gonna ask before. So Brentford is probably obviously because I'm at most of the games, I don't get a chance to listen all the time. Was the angriest I've heard John Anderson.
Yeah.
Throughout that game, he was foaming at Newcastle's like ability to give the opposition chances. Does he get like as animated as he sounds when he's watching the games?
No, it's genuine. I promise you, it's not put on. I mean, the one thing Ando gets accused of is being too negative. But he will just tell you that it's realistic. And look, he played in a different era when different things are expected of footballers, probably defenders in particular. And, you know, he likes defenders who defend first. He likes defenders who defend well. You know, he would say that there wasn't a great deal of that from Newcastle that day. And Lasse Vibe, who played up front for Brentford, who had a decent season, scored a fair few goals, I think, after Newcastle were there. Was pulling Lascelles all over the place and running off him, and Ander was getting really, really annoyed about that. He was also a bit annoyed because Gale had gone off as well, and you know, it was a bad injury. It was a bad time of the season to get
really top scorer injured.
Yeah, you know, he got his 20th goal, didn't he, that day? Good goal. And then they were without Shelvey as well, and they were struggling. And then there was 9 minutes added on, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I think we missed the numbers board. We were on the far side. We didn't have the best view. There were pillars in our way. We enjoyed the goal.
As if they've got pillars in front of you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You get that. They've got them at Birmingham. They've got a wooden television gantry at Birmingham with ladders to climb up for the cameras. We just sit just below it. But yeah, there's some curious press facilities. I'm not complaining, but you get around and you see the old and the new.
Well, I was going to ask you what was your favourite ground? Not in terms of the game, just your favourite ground for whatever reason to visit this season.
I like Brighton. Normally the press get fed beforehand. Food at Brighton was very, very nice. They look after you. You know, they do things right, and I think everyone loves Chris Hughton, and probably, I would say, probably doesn't begrudge Brighton their promotion, because they've been trying for a while. I think they're a nice club, and you know, I hope they stay up. I enjoyed that. Hull was great, because that was the first match that I did. I've never been to Hull. I got to loads of new grounds this season. I'd always wanted to go to Forest and Sheffield Wednesday, which I did. Lost 2-1 on both occasions, didn't we? It didn't turn out too well, but Hillsborough was fantastic. That's the noisiest,
good atmosphere, wasn't it?
Noisiest ground, I think, I've away ground that I've been to anywhere, covering Newcastle. That they made so many, it was such a supportive atmosphere as well. I would have liked them to have gone up, but them or Huddersfield.
Yeah, we need
a Yorkshire team, but I was impressed with them. Forest was a real throwback. It was and Barnsley even more so as well. But nice people. Nice clubs. You get around Bristol City were very nice as well. They were redeveloping their ground. It still wasn't quite finished when we were there. There's a lot of good grounds. They're nice at Cardiff as well, people.
Do you ever get a hostile reception from anywhere?
Worst place I've been, Grimsby. Playoff final in the conference, 2014. It was 1-1. That was the first leg. Gates had scored first. Grimsby equalised. Grimsby probably deserved to win the first leg. And there was a Grimsby Town fan behind us, and they had a right chip on their shoulder about being in the, well, National League conference as it was then. And they're a massive club, and for that level, and they shouldn't be up there. And please, they've gone up. But they were not happy with us when we were getting excited when Gated were going forward, and they were shouting at us during the game, you're biased. Well, obviously we're doing it from their perspective, we're not doing it from a Grimsby perspective. We were sitting next to the Radio Humberside commentators who were, so it'd been 2-6 a lot, he wouldn't have heard us. And then right at the end of it, finished 1-1, and Gated beat them in the second leg, got to Wembley and lost, unfortunately. He came in up to what, we have three mics, one for commentator, summariser, and the third one to pick up the crowd noise, and he leant over the barrier and shouted, screamed into the mic, town, and he's a 50 odd year old bloke who was just really like worked up, whipped himself up into a frenzy, and I couldn't believe it, of all the places to go.
Yeah.
And it was a, you know, nice old ground with a bit of character, and you know, smell of fish and chips, and it was, you know, it was a big occasion, good crowd, and just one fan spoiled it. But everything's been all right. The fans at away matches will talk to you and smile, and sometimes they want to see the team sheet. But everyone's been nice, and so no such problems in the Championship in my experience. But that's Grimsby was the worst one. I mean, I did the Europa League match in Russia, and you know, being at Grimsby was probably a more a tougher experience than downtown Moscow.
But you can ask where are you looking forward to most going next season?
Personally speaking, there's a lot of grounds I've not been to, and I've covered for Mick. I've done a lot of away matches, so I've been, first game I did was Arsenal when Andy Carroll scored the header for Chris Hughton. But grounds that I've not been to, I'm looking forward to Bournemouth. Which we've got. I've never been to Leicester either, so I've got a great record there, haven't I? But remains to be seen how they are next season, but that will be good. Just anywhere that I've not been to. There are still a few. I've not been to Man City, but I prefer the older grounds that are a bit noisier.
Yeah.
And even Stamford Bridge.
I've got no happy memories of Man City, don't bother. Just it's calling sick that day.
But it's one of those where it's a fantastic, you know, structure, isn't it? But you know, I'm saying Stamford Bridge, you know, I know it's been redeveloped and it's got the hotel there, but it's still on the site of the old ground. You know, a lot of the structure is still, you know, well, it's been there a long time. I know in the 70s and 80s it does not anything like it does now, but I think it was a car park at one end or something like that. But
like Oxford.
Don't remind me of Oxford, but places like that. And you know, we might not go away from home and do well or as well, but are we going to win 14 away matches next season?
I'd
be surprised. We would win the league for that, wouldn't we? But you know, places like that, it's just a privilege to be back in the Premier League. It's where we feel Newcastle should be, but you've got to earn the right and they have. And the scary thing about the Championship is you know, you've got all the clubs that are there, and when I was getting into football, probably half the Championship were in the Premier League. Derby, Forest, Leeds United, Sheffield Wednesday. Well, they're back there now, aren't they? And Middlesbrough as well. But you know, that league is just, it's horrible, and it's so hard to get out of, isn't it?
We'll get stuck.
We've said this, like, it's been a really, really enjoyable season for so many reasons, but wouldn't want to do it again. Like,
yeah,
it's been nice. We've had Rafa, obviously. It's made it an absolute just joy to be a Newcastle fan, even in the second division. But I couldn't do another 46 games.
No, absolutely. No, this time next year, you're going to be preparing to go to the press box at Barcelona.
Well, one thing at a time. Listen, Rafa, you know, he's not somebody that wants to just do all right.
No.
You look at his record everywhere, and that's one of the great things about him. That wherever he's been, pretty much he's achieved something. He's won a trophy. He's got promotions earlier in his career. He's somebody who you associate with winning. Now, not every manager, he's probably had times when it hasn't always gone as well as he would have liked, but in most clubs he's made a mark. Even at Chelsea, where he didn't have a great time, did he, with the fans, he won them the Europa League season. Newcastle were in it, so that is, you know, such a heartening thing. And I think back to last year when we got relegated, you know, compare it to Sunderland. Newcastle won 5-1 on the final day of the season. Sunderland lost 5-1 on the final day. They don't know where they're going. They're looking for a new manager. Newcastle was obviously a bit anxious about whether Rafa would stay, but the reception that day helped convince him to stay, and probably a lot of the fears about being down were eradicated because Rafa said he wanted the job and he was going to be at the club to get Newcastle back up. So the contrast Newcastle's circumstances with Sunderland's now, you've got to feel very, very lucky, but, you know, not necessarily sympathetic, but they're an example of a club that might find it hard to get up and get out, and you can get stuck like you said, can't you? I mean, look at Leeds. It's incredible, isn't it? Forest, you know, massive club, by winning European trophies and having Brian Clough and everything they achieved, and they can't get out. They nearly went down again, and I mean,
Ipswich,
yeah,
16th season, the longest serving Championship club.
Well, the longest serving club in any division below the Premier League,
yeah,
in a single division.
It's scary, isn't it? I think with, isn't it 49 of the 92 clubs that have played in the league clubs that have played in the Premier League now? At some point, one of them will drop out of the Football League.
Yeah.
I might, the number might not be right, but I read it somewhere.
I'm pretty sure that's right, yeah. We've got Blackburn, a Premier League champion, playing in League One. So, crazy, but
it's unbelievable, isn't it? And you know, as regards next season, I think there's genuine cause to be optimistic. And as I was alluding to there, Rafa's not somebody that wants to just settle. And you know, he's met the owner and it went well. He was really charmingly. And if Rafa's happy, I think we can be happy, because if he wasn't satisfied, then would he still be here? You know, he's smart enough about his own position, determined enough and ambitious enough in his own career to decide what's best for him. And if he didn't feel that he was going to have the necessary financial clout and the backing to do what he wanted and what he feels is necessary, then I couldn't have seen him staying. But as much as he wanted to, you would have understood probably had he not got the assurances that he wanted. So the fact that he is happy, and he's already started with Christianatsu and is obviously looking at good players to bring in on top of that, then I think we've got to be happy and optimistic. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen? It's Newcastle United. We don't know where we'll be in 3-4 months, let alone the end of next season. But, you know, I'm optimistic about next year because of him, because of what he's put in place already and because of what he wants to achieve. And, you know, you remember the rhetoric when Pardew was here and some of the statements from the club. It's so different now, isn't it, when you've got somebody that positive, you know, telling you what he wants, and the fact that you can trust in him and believe in him to execute his plans. It's brilliant.
I think that's a nice place to leave it, lads, unless you've got any more questions for Matt.
Where do you think we'll finish? Put your neck on the line.
it depends on who comes in. Like I mentioned that too, and I was a little bit surprised, but it is a signing that makes sense for about £6 million. You know, they know what he can do. Rafa's big on trust, he trusts him, and I think, you know, it's a good player to have in the squad. But obviously we need five or six for the first team of good quality, and a few more for the squad. They mentioned loans in the statement last week, so I think that'll be part of it as well. If they get what they're looking for, you know, I would like to think
win the league.
I would like to think that we could maybe try to get into the top half. You know, I think anything. But like anything above 12th would be a real achievement. But it just depends on what happens in the summer. But look at Southampton. Where do they finish? 8th? 46 points?
Exactly.
It's not been a good league this year.
No.
I think if you'd had the team that went down with the Rafa in charge this season in the Premier League, I think we would have been completely fine. I know it was mainly an attitude thing with them, not ability, but you just never know. It just depends on that. But I think we'll be fine. And I think, you know, we can hopefully have a good year and then look forward. But who knows? What do you think?
8th. First. No, I think the sky's the limit. As you say, it depends what we do manage to bring in, and that's the excitement of Rafa, isn't it? Like, it's not so much, oh, we're going to get a load of people we haven't heard of. He just back Rafa. If he wants a player, mm-hmm. there's a chance we can get him.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to play for Rafa?
Exactly. Why not dream of Europe? Why not? It's possible, as you've said, that the bottom 12, 13 clubs of the Premier League this season have been fairly poor.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why we can't all immediately jump above that lot. Rafa's record in big games. So we've already won 13 games home and away. And then we've got the top six to play against, in which Rafa's, you know, we can win the league. It's done.
I think a well resourced. Well supported Newcastle United with a stadium that is 100% positive behind the manager would be quite a challenge for teams to stop. And I think definitely, I agree with you, I think top 10 is really, really reachable. I expect us to finish, you say, because I think on the last day of the season teams could have finished between 12th and 8th, so close as the league, so it's really hard to define it to a position.
Yes.
But I just feel that because we'll have a better manager than all of the clubs in that region, he's got to be worth an extra few points. The money, the resources we might have should be worth an extra couple of points. The fact the team is so young should be worth something, and the fact that they're used to winning. You see a lot of teams, not Middlesbrough, but a lot of teams who come up because they're so used to winning, they always have a great start because they're used to winning games, and it's quite a good habit to have, and they have the confidence. So I think I'm going to say top 8, between 8th and 6th, 8th and 5th. You know, it might not happen, but it's better to dream as a football fan, isn't it, than say we're going to finish 17th and 16th. And as you alluded to, like finishing 4th bottom or 5th bottom, I think those days are gone, and that's the most important.
Isn't it great that we now get the chance to dream instead of just being pessimistic?
That's the difference, isn't it? You've got a manager who is a manager, in charge, got control, knows what he wants to do, and is, you know, hell-bent on delivering it. And fans trust him. Like you mentioned, the stadium, it will be full. Everybody will be behind the team. And look, there's going to be blips, there's going to be defeats, and there's going to be things that don't go well. But generally speaking, everybody is together, and that is a huge difference from last time. And the Championship's been nice because it's been a break from going away to Everton and losing 3-0 or whatever, and knowing that you've gone into this match and, oh, you know, away from home, you probably lose and not score, and you know, you just feel like you're going nowhere. But now feel you're taking a step back to take a few steps forward with the right man, you know, at the front of it. So if he gets what he wants in terms of players, and he'll have plenty of targets, and of course he's been looking and he knows who's out there and who he can possibly get. We might be surprised by a few. There might be some who we're delighted with. There might be others who we think, I'm not so sure. But you've just got to trust him, haven't you? And I think as well, a young team, a lot of players will get better. Everyone said there might only be 3 or 4 who would start in the Premier League. Richie, Shelby, Clark maybe. But for Hayden, and you think Perez will be better again, won't you? And, you know, I think Paul Dummett had a really good season. He's just not a left back, he's a centre half, in my opinion. And you've got Clark playing that role, but you've got people like in there that Rafa trusts and Rafa likes, and they're only going to be better players for having him as their manager for the length of time that they had. So I think some players will get better, they'll grow into the Premier League, the ones that haven't been there before, and others will improve. And he'll bring quality in, so there's a lot to look forward to, and hopefully it will be smooth. It isn't normally with Newcastle, but this is the best chance we've had to, you know, to achieve something and do well and push on properly and have sustained success, however you define that, since Sir Bobby Robson. Because when we finished 5th under Alan Pardew, and he gets a lot of stick, but did he really want to only strengthen the squad with Vernon and Ito that summer? Of course he didn't. He wanted more players, but they didn't kick on, and then they just ended up having 3 or 4 years of struggle, largely, apart from that half a season. And then the second half of the season just was non-existent, wasn't it? So, you know, I think this is a great chance to get back in there, you know, remind people of Newcastle United, and then push on, and hopefully they'll do that.
Brilliant. Matthew, thanks very much for your time. We much appreciate it, and I'm sure everyone's looking forward to tuning in next season to hear some more wins.
Well, we've got commentary of every match next season in the Premier League and in all the cups, so you know, if you can't be there, I hope you can be with us, and I hope you enjoy the coverage. And we have a phone in every night as well, Total Sport, and you know, we get a range of views, pro Benitez, some who aren't always happy with what he does, but you know, nobody is stopped from coming on if they're going to be negative. And it's great to hear from the fans, because you know, everyone's opinions are valid. We all see the same thing, but we see it differently.
Apart from the people that don't like Benitez.
Yeah, stop letting them on.
There are a few, honestly, there are a few, and they're not Sunderland fans winding us up. But thanks for having me on, and hopefully we'll reconvene at some point
next season
when Newcastle are high up in the Premier League.